Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for April 2009. Now, Bob, we talked last month about how, for the last, I guess, 16 months it was, Marvel's been averaging over half the total unit sales for the top 300, DC right around a third. And guess what? This month, Marvel had just over half the total unit sales for the top 300, and DC right around a third. So we're sticking in those same basic trends. Marvel had just a hair under 50.75% of the total aggregate units for the top 300. DC had 33.8.
Yeah, and what's interesting is those totals are still like that, even though DC had the top two spots. They have, what do we got here, 5 slots in the top 10, and they're represented well at the top of the list, but Marvel's just shipping more books. I saw some discussions out on some forums on the internet declaring victory for DC because they had the top 2 slots and 5 slots in the top 10, and I was looking at that, and I said, oh, I'll be interested to see the aggregate numbers when John has them crunched, because it might be a little premature to declare victory for DC just based on them having the top 2 comics, especially when the top 2 comics are barely making it over 100,000 units compared to past months when, you know, we've had really high numbers. And I'm not counting the Obama aberration.
Right, because that's statistical anomaly, et cetera. And the two specific ones DC had at the top were Detective Comics, which was the second part of the What Happened to the Caped Crusader. So it was by Neil Gaiman. So, you know, it's not like they're liable to replicate this success with the next issue. And then Flash Rebirth number 1. And again, first issue, major comeback for Barry Allen, not likely to replicate that success with the next issue. And these are the only two things above 100,000. Now, I agree it's I don't say premature, but questionable to declare victory for DC or whatever based on that. However, I will say that there is a certain victory that DC did have just in getting that top spot. Because really, they haven't had that, I don't think, since like the end of 2006. So, is it a huge victory? No, but it's a start.
And I won't take it away from
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing I noticed, though, about the top 10 is look at the top 7 books all have a $3.99 cover price, and also the number 10 books. So the top 7 and 8 of the top 10 all have a $3.99 cover price. So that would tend to indicate to me that people are still buying comics with the $3.99 price, and they're not being too shy about it, although we are seeing somewhat of a drop-off in numbers here.
Well, we usually see a drop-off anyway, so it's really hard to correlate how much of the price increase is causing that, how much of it is despite that or whatever.
Yeah, and I was just looking at it, you know, without your over-the-time insight, because it just seemed like we had a lot more books in the past that were over that 100,000 mark. And most of these Marvel books that are standard length 22-page stories for $3.99 seem to have really dipped down to numbers that are lower than what they were getting before.
Yeah, I mean, we usually have had a lot more that are over that that 100,000 mark. And, you know, really what we had this time, yes, we had two items that were over 100,000, but again, these were anomaly-type issues. And virtually guaranteed not to be replicated next month. Whereas in the past, we've had a number of titles that were actually for a while sustaining over 100,000. You know, some of the Avenger titles, for a little bit, I think maybe one or two of the X-Men titles were kind of bouncing up there. Hulk for a while. And, I mean, over 100,000, realistically, these days is not sustainable for an ongoing title.
And I guess that's where I drew my, you know, don't know if it's a sustainable conclusion, but it was like the ones that were sustaining themselves over 100,000 were all Marvel Comics. And they're all Marvel Comics that are now $3.99 a copy.
Yeah, yeah.
And they seem to have dropped from a sustainable over 100,000 to a sustainable, hopefully, under 100,000. So I'm just wondering if there's a bit more than statistically normal drop-off of some number of people, which I think would be expected because of the increase in price.
Oh, certainly, certainly. If you have a budget of X dollars and comics go from $2.99 to $3.99, you're going to be getting fewer comics. I mean, the math just works that way.
Right. But the thing that seems to have worked in Marvel's favor on that is the people are still getting those top-tier Marvel titles with the top popular teams on them, and the books that are potentially taking the hit there are some of the lower-tier things, independent books.
Well, because I think if people have to choose, you know, am I going to get, you know, I don't say a name brand title, but you know what I mean, something that's been around longer, they've got more attachment to, or is just inherently, for whatever reasons, a more popular character, they're more likely to go with that than a lower one.
Right. Now, that being said, the number 300 book had a decent number higher than the, you know, the top book last month. We were down in the 2000s somewhere last month, and the bottom book here was $36.98.
Yeah, but I mean, last month was like the third worst month in the Final Order era. And this was a slightly above average month for that same period of time. So of course the bottom of the list is going to be a bit higher, and things are going to look a lot better this month compared to last month. But it's kind of a, you know, you have one month that just tanks compared to the average and one that's slightly above, you know, it skews the numbers if you just look comparing the 2 months.
Right.
Now, it's interesting going back to the 100,000 mark. I mean, there have been times where we've had, you know, over 15 items doing over 100,000. And there have been a couple of periods where we'd have 10 or more doing that. But really, over the last year and a half or so, it's been, you know, 3 or 4, that kind of stuff, maybe as high as 9 at the beginning of 2008. We're not at the point where we've got these mega hits, either in ongoing titles or even in terms of miniseries events or things like that. And I think we're getting to the point where, particularly this month, last month, how ongoing titles are doing is becoming more important than kind of how it had been masked for the longest time by a Civil War, an Infinite Crisis, you know, those kinds of mega events.
Right. Well, I'll be curious, and maybe this is going to work to DC's benefit. You know, it's like, I don't, you know, like I said, I'm not sure, you know, declaring any kind of victory right now based on this. However, coming up in July, DC is going to have an event. They're going to have Blackest Night, and it's got a lot of tie-ins to it, and it's got a lot of minis and a lot of crossovers into regular books, and Marvel is not really having any substantive competing event. I mean, they have this Dark Reign thing, but that's kind of, well, I won't say it's going over like a lead balloon. I just don't think it is a Civil War, Infinite Crisis type of event that I think that Blackest Night has the potential of being at least on the order of an Infinite Crisis kind of event for DC. Whereas, you know, you look at most of these Dark Reign tie-in miniseries and stuff, and they're, you know, floating around down in the 20,000 range somewhere. They're not popping like a lot of the Civil War stuff was, or the Secret Invasion stuff.
I agree with that entirely, and I think part of that is Marvel's been going back to that well too many times. This is the third event in a row where you've got event colon, you know, this, that, and the other. Civil War, Young Avengers, it's like, okay, at least they're getting a title out with the Young Avengers, that's great. Then we get, you know, the Secret Invasion, Young Avengers, Runaways type stuff. It's like, well, okay, now we're getting a Dark Reign one. It's like, you know, been there, done that. So I think they're exhausting the power out of this technique. Whereas for DC, like you pointed out, this is really the first time they're going with this kind of style event for really, I'd be hard pressed to name the last time they did something of this magnitude. Because it seems to be potentially a little bit bigger in terms of the miniseries spin-offs and stuff, certainly than Final Crisis and Infinite Crisis, although a little bit lower on the tie-ins to the individual issues, which is where both Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis kind of went hog wild. So I think that DC's got a definite opportunity here because, you know, they're doing okay overall. This was a slightly below average month for DC, actually. You know, their aggregate sales for the top 300 was 2,275,507 versus an average of 2,344,969. So, not far below average. I mean, only by about 60, 70,000 units. But, again, just kind of an average month for DC.
Right.
And if they can stay with that average and then add on top of that, Blackest Night, and that clicks, and the feeling I'm getting from the fan community, people are interested in it. They're excited about it. It's got a very good chance of being a Civil War kind of event for DC, and they could really use that.
Well, you know, on that topic, I do think that what DC is doing differently this time is they are doing, I don't know why, maybe I'm going to say Marvel-style event, and when I say Marvel-style event, but it's one that is got a relatively comprehensible high concept that you can describe in about a sentence, as opposed to Infinite Crisis, where it's like, I didn't even know what the hell was going on after I read the whole thing. You know, and they had all this really inscrutable advertising for it, and it was like really cryptic, and I just don't think it was good at capturing the hearts and minds of the audience because it was just not as accessible as one of the Marvel events had been. You know, Superhero Registration Act, you know, Skrulls Invade, you know, the Dead are Rising and they have black Green Lantern rings. I mean, okay, I can understand that. It's, you know, it's very simple to understand. It's kind of cool, you know, and Geoff Johns is writing it, so I'm relatively certain that it's going to be a lot more accessible even as you're reading the event than Infinite Crisis was. So they've got a lot of things going for them here that, you know, if I had to look in the crystal ball, I'd be saying this is going to be a lot more successful than Infinite Crisis.
Infinite Crisis or Final Crisis?
Sorry, Final Crisis.
Final Crisis, I agree. And you're right, the marketability of this event, of Darkest Night, is a lot better than a lot of the past events DC's been trying lately.
See, I even get my crisis names mixed up. They blend together with me. Final Crisis, Infinite Crisis, Crisis of Crises. It should be, as long as it's not called the Blackest Crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
We're doing good. They've broken pattern on that, too.
I'm excited about it, and I hope it does well for DC. Now, there was one thing that I found really interesting about this month, and it was just the number of number one issues we had. There were a ton. There were 59, and on average, we're usually only getting about 40, which in and of itself is still quite a bit, but this is the most number ones that we've had on the top 300 list during the Final Order era. And, you know, a lot of this goes towards the, you know, the miniseries type nature of, you know, Flash Rebirth counts as that. We've got a couple of the Battle for the Cowl one-shots.
You've got various Dark Reign and various Battle for the Cowl ones, and I think that's a big thing where they are skewing, as you said, to not starting up continuing series. They're skewing more of the industry towards, let's start up a bunch of different miniseries. We'll tell the miniseries, and we're in and out in four, maybe five, six issues and put that in a trade paperback, and that's it. It seems to be the way things are going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been this kind of transient nature of titles for quite some time. Yeah, I talked about it a year or two back on my article on CBR on how it doesn't matter how well some of these things sell because they're going to run their course within 4 or 5 months or, you know, a year and be no more. And every time you've got a title that just kind of flips over and going to rank 80 this month is a good example of that. They've got the first issue of the new Exiles series. Now this is replacing the new Exiles series, and New Exiles was actually the name of the previous one that replaced the old Exiles series. So I mean, this is the third reboot or whatever, third go round on this title. And every time they flip it from one to another and do a new number one, sure, they're going to get some people coming on because, ooh, it's a number one, it's a jumping on point. It's also a jumping off point for a lot of people. And, you know, this Exiles number one did 31,131 units, which isn't bad until you realize that first issues in a lot of cases are kind of the high watermark for a title. The likelihood of this going up from here is, I think, zero. Now, add to that, they're about to kind of flip over the Ultimate line. And, you know, I, for one, am thinking, do I want to continue with it when it goes to Ultimate Comics or not? And, you know, obviously the people at Marvel are thinking by rebranding it, by, you know, relaunching it and renumbering it, they're going to get a boost in sales. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that because often, you know, we do see a bump on the number ones. But quickly those titles then trickle back down to roughly where that property was selling before.
Right.
But, you know, this is a case where just the number of new number ones and a few other things where we saw some crossovers between family of titles or just two or three titles or whatever, we were seeing a couple of bumps this month that were a little unusual or anomalous.
Now, I've got a question for you. You might have this data kicking around. There was another thread that I saw that was talking about the fact that Amazing Spider-Man has the aggregate of the three times a month book has dropped below what the three different Spider-Man books were selling on a monthly basis.
And it has, because it's now averaging right around, let's see, 64,278 for this month between the three issues. And if I recall correctly, how it had been doing over the last year or so was closer to 75,000. But that's one where it depends, really, what's your benchmark? Are you comparing it for the duration where they had Back in Black, Unmasked or whatever, the other, and all the other kind of micro spider events, one after another, after another, after another, for about a year and a half period? Because during that point, Amazing was selling really well, the other two titles, not so much. But if you look further back, how the title is selling now is more of a long-term average type thing.
Right.
So it's not like it was a huge mistake or anything. From my standpoint, I think merging the three different titles that were coming out once a month to one title coming out thrice monthly, usually, was a good move. Because we've only got about a 5,000 swing between the, maybe 6,000, between the lowest issue this month and the highest. Whereas before, the lower two titles together would usually not equal Amazing's sales for the month.
Right. I guess the other thing is had they not done this, it's been about a year, right? Had they not done this, those titles would have most likely, like almost all titles, been dropping 2 or 3% a month over that entire year also. So you can't just say, oh, well, you know, they would still be selling 70,000 because they probably wouldn't. They probably would have dropped each month in that intervening period also.
I think Amazing would be selling maybe at the high 70, maybe around 80,000, but the other two would probably be closer to the 30 or 40,000. And then what you've got then is a huge disparity in the sales of the title.
Right.
So here we've at least got some consistency. Now, of course, there are going to be people thinking when they hear this, it's like, well, yeah, it's doing the 60, 65,000, but it's making up for it in trades. Well, I'm not really convinced of that. If we jump just briefly over to the trades tab, and Chris and I will probably discuss this a bit more, you look at rank 30 there, we've got Spider-Man Kraven's First Hunt, which collects, I forget which issues of Amazing. It did 2,547 units. So that's an average of a copy a store. And that's, you know, a new release. When people say, well, it's making up for it in trade, pretty much for any title, with the exception, I'm going to say, of Vertigo titles, for the most part, and maybe Walking Dead, it's usually not true, at least within the direct market. Obviously, we're seeing a lot more trade sales outside the direct market than we see on comic sales, etc. But I think, by and large, with these kinds of discussions, what we're talking about is the core comic book reader, people like us that follow these things on a routine basis and get most of our stuff through comic stores. I think Amazing Spider-Man is doing good, but I also thought the thrice monthly was gonna burn a couple of people out. You know, we've had 50 or so, about 50 issues since they started at the beginning of last year. And that's more than some people are either willing to read, able to read, or, you know, willing to justify the cost of.
Now, do you have your last month and month before that data?
I can pull that up real quick.
Oh, actually, I don't know if it's last month. I'm just curious on Thor, which 601 dropped, right? It's at slot number 10, which is expected because the last issue, 600, was this big anniversary 600 issue and all this kind of stuff. So I don't think that the, you know, 17.68% drop is anomalous. I'm just curious as to what it was on issue 599, because I'm sure it went up a lot for 600. You know, did it drop down below what it was at 599? How's that maintaining? Because we're going to probably be seeing a lot more of that pattern, because Marvel's got a tremendous number of, you know, multiples of 100 anniversaries coming up. Captain America, Spider-Man, Daredevil. You know, there's just a lot of them.
Hulk is going to be the interesting one, because Hulk selling, I think, surprisingly well, and I think after Hulk 600, it splits into two Hulk titles. Because I think they're going to be soliciting Hulk, you know, 13 and 14 or whatever, as well as Incredible Hulk 601 or something like that. I thought I saw that in the Marvel previews, but I could be wrong. But going back to your question on how Thor is doing, if we look at, you know, over the history of this volume. Now, this is one that, again, started just really strong with nearly 200,000 units for the first issue. Obviously, there was no way that was going to sustain. Quickly dropped to around 123,000 with the second issue. And then, you know, it's been kind of dropping slowly, you know, with standard attrition since then. Now, going to your specific question of how did issue 12, which would have been the equivalent of 599, how did that sell? It sold 73,772 units. Now, 11, the one prior to that, sold 78,664 units. Now, these sales of 601 beat both the sales of 12 and 11. So, presumably, it's seeing a bit of a carryover from the huge bump it got with 600.
So that was good. I mean, they retraced themselves a couple of months, which is never a bad thing.
Right, right. I think with the next issue, though, or the one after it, we're quickly going to get back to the below, you know, 73,772 number that 12 had.
Because this is the first issue that I believe that number 12 was still 299, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
And they've now kicked it up. But again, interestingly, right? Because, I mean, you had anomalous price on 600 also, obviously, that was $4.99. And now they dropped it back down. And I don't know if people didn't notice or, you know, it was, oh, well, it was, you know, $4.99 last issue. It's only $3.99 this issue. Someone will start scratching their head and say, hey, wait a minute. Didn't this book used to be $2.99?
Well, it's funny because that's a really kind of common masking technique for the price change. Do a bonus size issue, jack up the price to, you know, something that the bonus size thing warrants, and then, quote-unquote, drop it to higher than it had been. You know, and I mean, I hope we don't see this on the other titles that they do in the 600, you know, shenanigans with. And I say shenanigans. When I say that, the value we're getting on these issue 600s, brilliant, excellent deal. However, the renumbering of going from 12 to 600 and stuff like that annoys me. You know, I'm tired of these number games. I'd rather that they would be getting better sales based on telling better stories, giving the audience more what they want, that sort of a thing. And I don't see that happening. But, you know, this is way of the world, unfortunately. Now, the other thing where these number issues kind of come into play is Flash Rebirth. Of course, you know, we're getting the first issue of the, I guess now, six-issue miniseries. We get the nice bump on the sales for 102,414 units. Only two other times in the Final Order era has Flash made it into the top 20, and here it is at number 2. You know, the first issue of the Bart Allen run of Flash Fastest Man Alive hit rank 7 with 120,419 units, and then the final issue of that hit rank 18 with 76,815 units. You know, I personally think that we're going to see a noticeable drop over the course of Flash Rebirth. I mean, we saw that on Green Lantern Rebirth, where it started at 178,297 units, dropped on that second issue to 139,960 units. So nearly a 40,000 unit drop. I don't think we're going to see that large of a one here, but easily a 20,000, 30,000 unit drop on the second issue is, I think, very likely. And not anything to be alarmed about.
Now, one thing I was noticing is you get several titles here that are actually going up.
Yes.
And I was looking at the X-Men Legacy one, number 223, and I said, what is it about X-Men Legacy 223 that would cause that to go up? And Marvel has a new variant cover scheme going on that is not the zombie cover, which was very popular. It was not the monkey cover, which is, I think, very much less popular than the zombie cover. But Marvel has been having these variant covers for their 70th anniversary, where they've got kind of a plain white cover with, you know, kind of a nice drawing of a lot of their iconic characters on it. And, you know, there's been issue of Black Panther, I think, that had Sub-Mariner on it for, you know, I don't know why. And you know, I've seen a lot of these. That X-Men Legacy 223, that had Marvel Girl, Jean Grey. They had one of those variant covers, and I think that's a 1 in 10 or 1 in whatever variant. And just like the zombie covers, I think those books are getting a bump. And even more so because I think there are a lot of people, you know, zombie is maybe a little limited, you know, where somebody's like, no, okay, I really like zombies. Well, you know, there's a lot less people who really like zombies than X-Men fans who would really like a Jean Grey, you know, variant, or, you know, Sub-Mariner, or the Human Torch, Captain America, or, you know, some of these others that have been coming out. And I think those issues over time, you know, we might look at those, and if you see the things popping up like that, that might have something to do with it.
Well, actually, this had two things going. It had that 70th anniversary variant cover thing going you were just talking about. I believe it also had a Wolverine Art Appreciation variant cover as well. And they've been doing that on a number of titles. So it hit kind of two of those, you know, at once. They've changed how they do the item code data for the top 300, and all it's telling me is it had multiple covers. It used to be they would give me the item codes for all the different covers. But this one looks like it had at least three different covers, two of which were incentive covers. And of course, that's definitely going to help sales. Now, the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting in a few places on the list was, like I was mentioning, there would be crossovers between titles. If we go to rank 113, we've got a 91.4% jump between issues 4 and 5 of Vigilante. And this is, of course, part of the Death Trap crossover. So this title nearly doubled in sales because it's crossing over with Titans and Teen Titans. Now, regardless of what we may think of the quality of that storyline, and I think both of us agree it's a bit lackluster, and that's being perhaps charitable, it served its purpose in terms of the sales of this book. Now, obviously, once this crossover finishes, these sales are going to drop right back down to where it was, if not a bit below it. You know, we're also seeing a noticeable jump on Jack of Fables. It went up by 41.55% because of it being the second part of the Great Fables crossover. Now, what's interesting is even with that, it sold 19,239 units, whereas Literals number 1, which is part 3 of that same crossover, sold 20,284 units, and Fables number 83, which is the first part of this whole thing, sold 23,627 units. So this is another case, and we've seen this before, where a story that's kind of bouncing between titles, certain chapters just don't sell as well as other chapters. Now, in this case, we're talking, 4,000, a little over, difference between Fables and Jack of Fables. But, you know, I always find it interesting that, you know, clearly a lot of people are not following the entire storyline. And this is only crossing between three titles. You know, I can understand that with a Dark Reign, with a Blackest Night, or something where it's hitting the entire output of a publisher, it seems like. But for these smaller crossovers, I'm always a little puzzled by that.
Yeah.
Now, another one that's in this area that might be worth talking about just briefly is Captain Britain in MI-13. We've got issue 12 here in rank 117. It sold 19,989 units, which is up about 12.6%, but this is another one that had a Wolverine Art Appreciation variant. I don't know who did that cover because it was by TBA. TBA, of course, very popular artist these days. And, of course, everyone knows Wolverine appreciates art. So, you know, seeing his pick for the cover, sure, whatever. Again, this is another case, like you were saying, with the zombie stuff. Slapping another cover on it is gonna get a boost in sales. To me, that's bad profits. It's a bad way to boost sales. But it worked. And it got this almost 20,000, whereas the previous issue was at 17,753 units. And again, part of why I thought this would be interesting to talk about is Paul Cornell, the writer, has already said that, yeah, the title's ending with, what, issue 15?
Yep, 15.
And it was one that, had he not said that, they had basically just stopped soliciting it, and we'd have been wondering, I wonder what ever happened to, which kind of stinks. But this is a case where B-list characters, I think a good solid writer, but not one that I think's got a huge name and fan following. That's why it's selling where it is.
Well, I mean, I like the title, and that second story arc was pretty weak. And I think if the Dracula story arc had been the second story arc, it might not have been canceled. It might not. I think it dropped down a lot more than it could have because that second arc was just very questionable.
Well, I think these days, any title, I mean, a weak story arc on any title is potential to kill it, particularly one that's not strong.
Yeah. Well, especially one that's, one that's like, you know, toying around down at like around 20,000 at Marvel, right? And probably a little less at DC. One thing that's disturbing to me on here, again, in the same area, is slot 133 with the first issue of Warlord. I love that book. 17,537 on the first issue.
I saw that.
That is not boding well for that title being around past about 6 issues or so.
I'm not sure I agree with you on that. And the reason I'm not sure I agree with you on that is I think this is playing by different rules than your average DC title. To me, this falls along the lines of, say, a Jonah Hex, things like that, where having it in the lineup to have that diversity of genres and stuff like that, I think may cut it a little bit of a break on the sales side. Now, I'm hoping that's the case, because 17,500 for starting. That doesn't bode well. Now, this may be one that retailers ordered conservatively on because of really how badly the last run did and how long it's been since Grell's been on the title. Because the previous series started, well, actually, this is kind of interesting because, again, this started at 17,500 and change. The previous one by Bruce Jones and Bart Sears started, and this is back in February 2006, I believe, at 44,971 units.
Wow.
Yeah. But then with the second issue dropped to 21,565 units, so it lost half its sales on that second issue.
That's because a lot of people read the first one.
Yeah, yeah. And then it trickled all the way down to where at the end with issue 10, it was selling 10,538 units. But the first four issues of that outsold this first issue.
I hope this sticks around. I mean, obviously DC, they're still publishing Jonah Hex, and it's only doing about 11,500, so.
I'm hoping they take the long-term view of this, and I think they are, because we're getting, I believe, a showcase of the original Warlord stuff, which I think will be good support for this title. And this is one that I think needs some time to get some good word of mouth and for people to really have a chance to kind of discover it and get into it.
I mean, I look at the bottom of the list here. But it's not even the bottom of the list. I mean, it's down around.
Yeah, we're not even at the halfway point. I mean.
Yeah, we're like around, you know, it's like, you know, around 166 for Jonah Hex. But I mean, you're kissing around 10,000 copies here, which, you know, for a lot of books, that would be death. But, you know, I see Madame Xanadu, one of my favorite Vertigo titles. That thing's selling 9,663 copies. That is a fabulous book, in my opinion. And it's barely selling anything. I mean, it's selling way down there. But, I mean, it's a Vertigo book, so they will usually keep those things around a little longer.
Look at rank 197, where we've got The Mighty number 3, and it's selling 8,776 units. Now, it's down 17.37% from the second issue, which is a larger-than-average second to third issue drop. And again, it's selling under 9,000 units. This is one of those neither fish nor fowl kind of titles. It's a superhero book in the main superhero section of the DC previews, yet it's not in the DC universe or even multiverse as far as I know. You know, it seems to be its own little continuity, and there's nothing wrong with that, but people who would be interested in that are probably skipping the main DC stuff because they don't want to get involved in a huge universe. The people who are in that section because they like the huge universe are saying, well, it's disconnected, I don't care. So this is one where I think it's just been mismarketed. You know, we saw the same thing with Family Dynamic when it was put into the Johnny DC line, which it really would have fit into probably 2 or 3 years earlier, but they have kind of kiddified that line so much that it fell out of step there. So it's as much what is the content and where is it within the imprints at DC as to whether it makes sense and if it'll stick around.
Speaking of Vertigo, I noticed that Air number 1, that had like a little kick for the $1 issue. I mean, percentages are funny when you're selling this low. You know, it sold 10,000 units, a little over 10,000 units of the $1 issue, and now it's back down to 7,200.
Well, the sales on this one are really kind of interesting because it's doing a little bit of some weird bouncing around. If you go into column AG for this row, Bob, it's got the sales history here. First issue sold 11,088 units. Second issue dropped to 8,775 units. Okay, noticeable drop. Second issue, not uncommon. Third issue, however, bounced up to 10,060 units. That's unusual. But then with the fourth issue, it's back down to 8,911 units, then 8,411 units with the fifth issue, down to 7,605 on the seventh issue, then back with the $1 issue, up to above 10,000 with 10,288 units, and now kind of back into that same sales curve it had been on for the last couple issues with the 7,215 units. But that third issue is the one that I find very interesting. You know, this is one that I think has the potential of sticking around if it can survive another 6 months to a year. But looking at those numbers, I'm not sure if I were publishing, would necessarily keep it around for another 6 months to a year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a quick scan of the trade side to see if the first trade of that is on the list, and it's not. I'm not even sure if the first trade's been released. But this is one where, because it's Vertigo, because how they tend to sell on the trade side, could actually move enough units over there to keep it going. But even if every store gets one copy, that'd be, you know, 2,500 units. That'd be about a third of the monthly sales. That's pretty good. But that's one that, yeah, doesn't look particularly good just on the face of it. Two ranks above that is Gen 13, number 29. It's doing around 7,312 units. I'm really wondering if what they're going to be doing with the whole Wildstorm stuff. That seems to become so irrelevant to a large degree. Nobody's talking about it. Apparently not many people are reading it. You know, are they going to reboot it? Are they just going to let it fade away? What are they going to do? If you go to rank 246, we got the final issue of War That Time Forgot, 12-issue series. And this is one that I think is going to make DC, you know, really stop and think, do they want to commit to 12 issues on some titles? Because this was down to 6,280 units. It dropped nearly 5% on that last issue.
Now, I read that whole series, and it was okay. I could have easily told that in 8 issues.
Well, and it only started at 18,238 units, so it lost 2/3 of its sales over the course. And really, about a third of that within the first 2 issues. So, which again, yeah, 21% drop or whatever on a second issue, another 11 on the third, that's pretty standard. It's when it keeps going after that that you start to have problems. It's always interesting looking at this side of the list because there's a lot of really good things that just either aren't getting into the stores or aren't getting the traction or whatever, which is really too bad. You know, we've got Dean Koontz, Nevermore, number 1. We reviewed that on the Weekly Spotlight. It's down at rank 287. It sold 4,244 units, which, you know, for an indie book, new property, because I don't think this is adapted from any of Dean Koontz's novels. This isn't too bad, but it's also one that, you know, is a drop in the bucket compared to what we're seeing at the top of the list.
You see Knights of the Dinner Table, number 149, that we just talked about on the show on Monday, the 150 issue, and it was 4,000, a little over 4,000. Now, one thing there is I suspect, and I think we talked about that one, you know, being much more gamer-centric. I mean, anytime I ever go into a game shop, they're pretty much selling Knights of the Dinner Table. I would suspect that this book, and it's not like it's a tremendous seller or something, right? I mean, it's 4,000 copies, but I would say they're probably selling another 4,000 copies through game shops that wouldn't show up on these numbers, because that's probably going through some game distributor somewhere.
But again, you know, it's a unique case because it's really the only thing on this list that's as much a gaming magazine as a comic.
Right. But I'm just saying it's like it's how some of these things you can look at and, you know, especially on the trade side, right? When you're looking at the trade side, there's lots of sales on, like, particularly, in my opinion, Vertigo type of books and the more indie type of books, I think, that have a really strong selling profile outside of the comic shop.
Yeah.
You know, I think that outside of the comic shop, things that do well, this is just a feeling, right, are things that are totally away from superheroes. You know, your various Vertigo type of books that are just some, or, you know, some other publishers that are telling some kind of like crime genre story or sci-fi or something that's just not comics. And your very top iconic superheroes that people recognize because they've been on TV or the movies. And that's where I think like your mid-tier superheroes, you know, you take your Captain Britain, for instance, and it could be the best written book in the world. And you slap that in Borders, and it's like, people are going, what the hell is this? Captain Britain, you know, what do I want with that? You know, they don't know who Captain Britain is. You know, somebody going to plop down, you know, $10, $15, $20 or something on a, you know, what the heck is this, when they can go with, oh, I want to read, you know, this other genre, or they go with, you know, oh, Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, you know, something that they're familiar with.
Yeah, totally, totally. And part of that is, you know, what we're looking at here is the aggregate sales to comic stores through Diamond. Obviously, through different channels, like gaming stores for nights at the dinner table, and, you know, mass market outlets and stuff, they're going to have a different audience, and different genres are going to do better, different items are going to do better. So looking at any kind of subset or whatever, you're going to see some very different sales trends. Now, I tend to look at this and see value in this because while certainly you've got some titles like Knights at the Dinner Table, Archie titles, and a couple others, you know, when you go to the trade side, Buffy, Star Wars, those sorts of things, they're going to sell very well outside of the direct market. By and large, what's driving content creation are these sales within the direct market. And when you compare some of this stuff to statement of ownerships, things of that nature, what we find is, as a general rule of thumb, on average, these account for, say, around 90% of the sales. I mean, the majority of the sales by a noticeable degree. Now, obviously, that won't be the case with, again, Knights of the Dinner Table, some of the Archie Digests, etc. And
I think other ones that fall in that category are when you have, like, the TV properties, like from Boom, you guys see Eureka down here at slot 294. You know, you see various G.I. Joe, Transformers, you know, Terminator, you know, other kind of recognizable things. I think those also, in a bookstore, if there's a trade paperback of, you know, Battlestar Galactica that's based off the current, you know, just completed TV series, you know, I think people, that's another one. It's a recognizable property. It's like, oh, I like the Eureka TV series, so that's interesting. Oh, they make a comic of the Eureka TV series. Oh, let me check that out, you know, and, you know, they could get sales of that, whereas, you know, someone picks up, you know, like the Atom, you know, or Metamorpho or Captain Britain or, you know, lots of these other characters that it's like, who the heck is that?
Well, I mean, people tend to gravitate to what they're familiar with. It just makes sense, particularly in this kind of economy. Are you going to risk your entertainment dollars on a property you've never heard of or one that you're familiar with? Now, one of the other things I did this month that might be fun to talk about for a few minutes is I took this list of data, and what Diamond does every month, just as a quick recap, although I'm sure most of our listeners know this, they report the sales as with an index value that's relative to a particular item on the list. Now, this month, that was Batman Battle for the Cowl number 2, which actually I found kind of interesting because Detective Comics was available as a potential choice. So everything here was listed in terms of that. Once you know the sales for items, you can, you know, solve for X and get everything. But this is, like I was saying, kind of the aggregate sales to comic shops kind of across the nation. What I did is I wanted to compare that to a subset of data. Now, obviously, a lot of stores you're not going to be able to walk into and say, how did everything sell for you down to the unit level in April? I mean, understandably, they're not going to probably give you that data. I'll be honest, I haven't gone around to the local stores and pestered them to see if I could get it. So what I did is I went to comicology.com that has a place where you can say, hey, I am interested in this title, and mark it as a pull. There's an app on Facebook that does the same thing, but I had problems pulling in that data, which is why I used the Comicology one. Both of those, though, I think are really good, you know, applications and interesting ways to kind of judge interest in titles. And I was curious if there was any kind of correlation between what people online were saying, hey, I'm interested in, and how things actually sold. So I took the list of everything that sold. I plugged in all the numbers I could find on comicology.com. I then did the division by the pulls for Battle of the Cowl, setting that to 100% index. For Comicology, and then compared that index rating to the Diamond index rating and came up with a chart where you can really see the curve down for the Diamond top 300. And then I overlaid a chart of what some people might think in theory would be a similar curve for a subset of that data. Now again, this isn't actual sales at a store, but it's roughly analogous to that. And in some ways preferable to that, because sales at any store are going to be capped by how many copies they actually got, what that particular store owner and staff is pushing, is aware of, and is actively selling. And what I found is there was virtually zero correlation. I mean, there was a rough approximation of the curve, but there were some things that were selling half, you know, what the Diamond Index was, the Comicology Index was half. In other cases, it was like twice as much. There were a few places where they seemed to coincide, but like maybe three or four out of the top 300.
So what that tells you is that looking at any one individual store is really not going to give you useful data, you know, for trending.
Well, certainly not for nationwide trending of overall sales. Now, obviously, overall sales trends would be useless to a degree at any individual store. Now, if I were a store and this Comicology stuff was what I was selling, what I would be doing is doing this kind of a chart on a regular basis, comparing where Diamond is selling better than my customer base and trying to figure out why. Is it because my customer base simply isn't interested in manga or gaming or whatever the genre is or that creator or what have you? Or is it something that, based on how other titles are selling, could be doing better? You know, so I think there's a gap analysis that can be done for stores using this data to show potential areas of growth in their sales. You know, and also to highlight what's selling abnormally well in their store compared to the national average. You know, and again, using that to better understand your customer base. But obviously using any single store to try to extrapolate national trends is a foolish thing. Just because, you know, each store has a unique customer base, both on, in terms of the geography, the interest level, and the community.
But what you're saying is that in general, any individual store, if they really wanted to do this, they should be kind of keeping their own trending. And if they do look at a national average or a Comicology or something like that, and they say, oh, well, these guys are selling this, like you said, much better, is there something they're doing differently? Are they pushing it? Are they making it a staff pick? Are they merchandising it differently? You know, what is going on that causes that? Or is it just that, hey, you know, my customers are, you know, not interested in that material?
Well, like rank 3 was Wolverine Weapon X number 1. Now, that sold on a national level 97,882 units, and it had a Diamond index of 109.83. However, the Comicology pulls were only an index value of 55.41. So within that set, it sold much lower, you know, compared to the sales of Battle for the Cowl number 2 than the corresponding relationship through Diamond. Now, either that means the people at Comicology.com that are filling in these polls and stuff, that customer base isn't that interested in Wolverine, or maybe they're burnt out and don't need yet another Wolverine title, or there's an opportunity here to make sure they know about this title, to see if they're interested in it, that sort of a thing. And identifying those areas, I would think, as a store would be useful. But yeah, I really don't know how many stores kind of have that kind of data mining expertise available and really time to go digging into that. Obviously, if they do, and as more and more point of sales systems get put into place, the data becomes available. It's just a matter of pulling it out and looking at it. But yeah, I was surprised how many cases in which the sales were, you know, half or a fifth or a tenth of the Diamond equivalent for Comicology and other cases where it was double and stuff. A lot of people I talk to on this are always saying, well, you know, at my store it sells this, as if that's evidence that overrides the national data. And certainly at that store, that's the more important data, but in terms of what's keeping the content being created, what's making these decisions of do we keep a title like Captain Britain going or not, it's the overall sales. And using Captain Britain as an example, it had a diamond index of 22.43. At Comicsology, it had an index of 38.34. So it was selling kind of statistically better there compared to Battle for the Cowl than national average. Now, obviously, there's the case where Battle of the Cowl could be, you know, an anomaly and so forth. But realistically, you could rework this for any item at the 100% level and get a similar chart. That's what I had on that. Other thing that was interesting, there were 103 items at $399 cover price this time around. Last month there was 108. And, I mean, we're really starting to see that ramp up big time. Back in February there was only 89. In January there was 91. Prior to that it was below 75. But it is definitely creeping up, and yeah, I think we've got to face the fact that $399 isn't seeming to be any kind of major barrier to sales, and that that's going to quickly become the norm over the next couple of months.
Another thing I'll point out when these things pop on the list is like this New Mutants saga. You know, Marvel does a lot of these. You know, you get a bundle of 25, and these are free, quote-unquote free. And, you know, I just want to let people know, you thank your store, because these are not free to your store. You know, it's not like other companies that when there's marketing material, they send out free marketing material to sell their product. Marketing is left in the hands of the individual comic shop, because your comic shop has to pay for that bundle of 25 copies of the New Mutant Saga. And, you know, the retail price is $10. I suspect, you know, the store is probably paying half that. Even so, if they're paying $5 for a bundle of 25, that still means they're paying 20 cents a copy for that thing that they are handing you for free. And Free Comic Book Day works the same way. Your comic shop is actually paying for those comics to give you for free as a promotional item. So if you have a shop that's actually giving you free stuff, one, thank them, and two, go back and, you know, buy some stuff from that store, because, you know, that is a operating expense for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and particularly in this economy, you know, if you've got a store you shop at regularly and you've got titles you pick up regularly, make sure the store knows that. Whether they've got an official pull system or not, the least you could do is tell them what you're getting and not getting, to where they can be ordering with more information and therefore having what you want when you want it and not getting stuck with other copies of stuff that just isn't going to sell. There have been, you know, a number of stories over the last couple of months of stores closing down, some of which have been in business like 20 years or something. And, you know, times are tough. I just got back to work, but I'd been out of work for a couple of months. And that certainly impacted my spending, which, you know, impacted to some minor degree, I'm sure, DCBS, where I had been spending a lot more than I was. So, you know, anything you can do to help your stores out and give them as much information as possible for their ordering. The better off you are, the better off they are, the better off the industry is just in general. Anything else? Do you think that pretty much does it?
I think that does it for me.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as we know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.